Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal, Ozil. Marca Mesut Ozil.
Pisando la pelota Nelson, a la media vuelta, se vuelve a marchar Nelson, Martinelli con la pelota, el recorte de Martinelli, segundo tanto de Martinelli, segundo gol de Gabriel Martinelli.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always with James from Gunner Blog. James, goodly morning to you.
Goodly morning to you too. Lovely. Did you enjoy that one?
Oh, I did. I did. I did enjoy it. And just before we crack on into how much I enjoyed it, I just want to take a few moments to thank everybody for all the feedback that they gave us on Monday's episode. Whichever side of the fence you're on, you know, I was feeling a bit glum. You were a bit less glum. Whichever side of the fence of glumosity you're on, I want to thank everyone for the feedback, for, you know... It can be divisive, I think, football at times, and somehow an opinion that differs to yours is seen as confrontational, and it's been great that so many people can say, actually, I saw your side, Andrew, but I thought James made good points, or I'm on James's side, but I understand where you're coming from, Andrew. So it's great to have that kind of feedback, so I just wanted to take a moment to thank everybody who got in touch after that, apart from the bloke on Reddit who called me racist and autistic. That guy can go fuck himself.
Wow.
I know.
Yeah, he definitely can go fuck himself. We're on the same side of the fence on that one.
Exactly.
It was genuinely one of the nicest reactions we've ever had to one of these shows, so thanks for listening and thanks for all the comments. And we've been rewarded with a lovely game of football to talk about.
We certainly have. Before, I had mad dreams last night.
Me too. What are yours?
Football dreams. Whenever it's a late game and I'm working afterwards and doing player ratings and stuff on the site, it takes me a while to wind down when I go to bed, and I often lie there and it takes me quite a bit of time to get to sleep. But my dreams were football related. I dreamt I was the player manager of Arsenal at 48 years of age. I was the player manager of Arsenal. We were playing Barcelona at the Nou Camp.
Did you pick yourself?
Of course. Of course I did.
Why not?
And it was great. We were doing the warm-up. We had the balls out. We were doing some drills on the pitch. And just before the game kicked off, I fucking woke up, which was really annoying. And then I went back to sleep and I had another football dream where I was playing on this big, wide-open grass pitch in the middle of nowhere. And there was a big, big, gigantic heifer of a striker playing against me, and I was the only defender, and he kept trying to barge me off the ball. They lumped it long. They kicked it out, and it was a throw-in, so I ran over to take the throw-in. Unai Emery was on my team, right?
Okay.
Unai's on the team. He's standing on the pitch, and I'm standing there with the ball about to throw it, and I'm going, Unai! 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 And he's just not paying any attention to me. There's something in that.
What could it mean? Just very quickly, those are great dreams. I dreamt that I lived in like a post-apocalyptic world where it was all like, you know, desert and stuff. And me and my wife were living in like a little cabin, like an abandoned cabin in the woods.
Right.
Completely isolated. But then there was a little shack next door and Rihanna moved into it. And I was like, oh, God, we were actually having quite a nice time, you know, away from the world, away from the privacy, away from the trolls on Reddit. Suddenly Rihanna's turned up and we sort of had to like decide if she was friend or foe. My wife made me guard the toilet while she was in it so that Rihanna didn't just walk in.
Wow.
That was my dream.
Okay. Well, the only thing I'd say about living next door to Rihanna is if on an inclement day you were in need of an umbrella, you'd have no shortage of options in that regard.
That's true. We could stand under her umbrella.
All right. Let's do football, because the football was really good, really enjoyable. And, you know, I don't quite know where to start other than with Gabriel Martinelli. I don't suppose there's much point in going over the team selection. It was more or less what we'd expected in terms of the starting 11. There was one notable absence, which we will have to talk about, but we'll do that in part two. And we won't spend too long on it anyway, because, you know, at this point it's been done to death. But Gabriel Martinelli gets a start up front. I'm just going to have a quick look back here at what Unai Emery said about him as a centre forward. I think he said, I could be wrong here, it's not his best position.
Yeah.
He said...
His best is left wing, I think he said.
Yeah, he said, it's not the best position for him. And you're going, okay, if that's him not playing in his best position, holy fuck, what's going to come next?
Yeah, something tells me we're not going to get an Ainsley Maitland-Niles-style public plea to be played in his best position. I mean, he if he's not a centre-forward, he's doing a very good impression of one.
It's a very good impression, yeah.
I mean, there's a great piece on Clang, The Athletic, obligatory mention, by Jack Lang about Gabriel Martinelli and his upbringing as a footballer. And at Ituano in Brazil, he played left wing, right wing, up front, and as a number 10. He basically played every position in the front four.
Right.
But I think a lot of players who sort of go through that progression and feature in all those positions, if they are top talent, they do often end up as a centre forward, don't they? I mean, his idol is Cristiano Ronaldo, and that's exactly what happened to him.
Yeah. I mean, you could see easily how he could play in all of those positions. I think what was great about, you know, even in the last 10 minutes, the Aubameyang substitution did put the shits up me a bit, but I don't really see the need to dwell on that today. It was a great night, and we should focus on all the positive things. But even when Martinelli was moved out to the left-hand side, he was still involved in the game. He was chasing, yeah. He was harrying, he was winning the ball high up the pitch, which was something I was very, very impressed with. He was creating chances. He nearly created one for Aubameyang in the 10 minutes that he was on the pitch. So he didn't look any less effective on the left-hand side. You could see how he could do it from the right, certainly as a number 10. I mean, it was just an unbelievable performance from an 18-year-old, with all the caveats, of course. People will say, well, Standard Liège are shit. But, you know, Watford were a bit shit when we played them the other week, and, you know, we didn't have anyone who stepped up and played as well as that. So I think it kind of does him a bit of a disservice if you say it's only the Europa League, or it's, you know, against the team that aren't great. Sure, they're not great, but you still got to go out there and do it. And I would say that the things that he contributed, the things that he produced in that game last night were far more to do with his quality than the lack of quality of the players or the team he was facing.
And also, he scored in the last game as well. I mean, it's not like this is a one-off. He's been brilliant in both outings, I think. And scoring goals at first team level, almost whoever the opposition, is not an easy thing. I mean, we've had some promising youngsters in the past. You know, Benny Kofobe, I think, never scored for the first team. Tuba Akpom, he never scored for the first team. Despite all the hype, these guys were never able to actually step up and put the ball in the net. Mm. Martinelli is doing that already. I saw a stat flying around. Only Romelu Lukaku and Mario Götze have scored braces in this competition at a younger age. And they've gone on to have massive careers. And of course, that's no guarantee, but it shows you the company that he's keeping. I thought he was really excellent. I agree. He's closing down. His pressing from the front is so aggressive. He defends right from the front line, and we don't have too much of that in our squad. He's got that slight Alexis Sanchez hunger to him of wanting to close the space, wanting to get the ball back. And he's a goal scorer and he's a creator. I mean, he laid on a goal for Ceballos with a brilliant piece of play. He might have had a hat trick. He was involved in absolutely everything we did.
Yeah.
And he, something that people saw him play as a teenager, I saw a quote from someone who played alongside him saying he makes decisions like a 27-year-old. And I think that's a quality we see a little bit in Bukayo Saka as well, is that when these players just have such a natural affinity for the game, they make decisions that are more mature than their years. And Martinelli is already doing that. I just think something that's really exciting about him as well is that a young player comes from Brazil, you kind of expect that technical quality. You kind of expect them to be good on the ball, able to dribble a bit, able to, you know, put some bend on a shot. But the fact he works so hard, the fact that he's out there scoring with his head, you know, leaping between centre-halves who are twice his age or whatever it might be, that's really encouraging. And he's taken to English football and taken to this team like a duck to water.
Yeah, wasn't it Tim Stillman who talked about how in the 18 months he was playing in Brazil, you know, he wasn't playing in, you know, at the top level, but he was playing against men, and he was playing against men on bockety pitches, and he was getting kicked around. So there's a physical maturity to the way that he plays. And I think you're absolutely right about the intelligence that he shows. Decision-making, you know, I'm not trying to say or be critical of anyone else, but you look at someone like Reece Nelson, who I think had a really good game last night, and I think his decisions were better than they were 2 months ago, you know, so more playing time has helped Reece Nelson develop. But you can see with Martinelli that the decisions that he makes, when he makes them, they're sort of, it's almost, not telepathic, that's not the right word, but they're very instinctive, but they're right at the same time, if that makes sense. So the second goal that he scored, the ball came to him in the box, he put it on his right foot and didn't take a moment to say, okay, what am I going to do now? What should I do? Should I pass it? Should I shoot? He made a decision in an instant and executed that decision, put the ball in the far corner. And I think that's a really good example of him knowing where he is on the pitch and what lies in front of him and what he's got to do.
And taking on responsibility as well, you know, being prepared to be the guy who takes the shot on, who, you know, he has a bit of bravura about him. He has some real confidence. He doesn't look overawed by anything. He's playing in front of 60,000 fans. I mean, that is probably a new experience to him, a new level, a new platform. But everything you read about him, he's been waiting for this his whole life, you know, his whole, since he was really young, in his sort of early teens, he's been preparing for a move to Europe. He's been learning English. He's been waiting for this chance. I mean, something that makes it particularly sweet is that, you know, he had four separate spells on trial at Manchester United and that move didn't happen and we've ended up with him. So that looks like a real win. And I mean, on a night where there was a lot of promise and a lot to be encouraged about from these young players, he was head and shoulders above everybody else, and that tells you about the quality of his performance.
Yeah, brilliant, really brilliant. But we can't talk about him or his performance without talking about that first goal, because I think it's sensational. It's such a good goal. I mean, it starts with a brilliant pass from the back from Mustafi, who's much maligned, of course, but I think he had a good game last night, and that pass was superb, switched the play very well. It was Nelson took the ball on, gave it to Kieran Tierney, who obviously we're going to talk about because he was fucking great as well. But when I put it on the blog today, an image of the cross just as it's coming in, and Martinelli is so far outside the near post. He's also got a defender goal side of him, and if you were the defending coach, you'd say, okay, he's in a good position there because he's got the player, you know, behind him. He is goal side. He's blocking off that near post. The goalkeeper's at the near post as well. So the chances, A, if Martinelli gets there, he's going to head it towards the near post. The goalkeeper's going to get it. Just the timing, the execution, the way he, you know, absolutely uses those neck muscles to meet what is a great delivery from Tierney, but to put that header where he put it is unbelievable. Like if Ronaldo, Cristiano Ronaldo, had scored that header, you'd be going, wow. If Olivier Giroud had scored that header, and he scored some very, very good headers in his time, you'd be going, wow. And I'm trying to think of other great headers of the ball, but, you know, it's up there with as good a headed goal as you'll ever see.
Yeah, it actually reminds me of a Giroud goal. I can't place it, but I seem to recall a similar one where he got to the ball at the near post and sort of managed to divert it into the far corner. It is a fantastic header, and it really suggests that maybe his header in the previous run-out wasn't a fluke. I mean, that one, I couldn't believe it when it flew into the top corner. I thought it's come off his shoulder or it's taken a nick off the defender. But he's done it again, and the goal itself is sensational. I sort of only really realised today, in the cold light of day, looking back at it, that it starts from Emi Martinez. It starts from a short goal kick, you know, and it's well worked. Mustafi finds that space. The quality of his pass is, I mean, better than pretty much anything he's produced in the last 18 months. I mean, it's a really outstanding ball. Nelson does well. Tierney's cross is great. It's into the right area. But Martinelli's bravery, as much as anything, you know, getting there in front of the defender, putting his head out, turn it into the far corner. Yeah, it's a world class header. I mean, it really is, and I'm not saying that to overhype the player and, you know, say, oh, therefore the player is world class, but just in isolation, it's an outstanding headed goal.
Well, I'm trying to think of somebody else in our team right now who could score that goal, and I'm not sure we have that player in the squad.
No, I can't think of anybody really. I mean, Aubameyang's not particularly fond of using his head, but I don't think I remember Alex Lacazette ever really scoring a header. So, yeah, I mean, it's not something we're overly blessed with, aerial ability, actually.
Well,
I think.
Oh, there we go. Spot. I mean, we've uncovered another attacking weapon, if you like, because it is a useful thing to have players who are effective in the air. And I think he, you know, in that sense, he might remind you of somebody, you know, he's not a 6'3" guy like Giroud, and Ronaldo's a tall guy as well. You think of someone like Tim Cahill, for example, who scored a lot of headers because he was just brilliant at heading the ball. So maybe that's something that we can use and utilize throughout this season. But yeah, look, we can go overboard on new talent sometimes, and we can get a bit carried away with what we expect from them. But when you see a player with that kind of potential, and let's be clear, it is, you know, he's realized some of that potential in the two games that we've seen of him. I don't want to say he's going to do this every week, because of course he's not. But it's hard not to be excited when you see that level of talent at 18 years of age.
Yeah, I think we've talked about this a lot with young players this season, is that, you know, I don't think the talent of any of these boys is in real question. I mean, that, you know, they come from great stock. They come from a great academy. They're players with ability. But the ability to actually turn that into tangible positives on the pitch and turn that into goals and assists and make that impact, that is something distinct, and that is something that separates certain players from certain others. And Martinelli has it. He just has it, you know, in the same way that I feel Saka has it. And it's been a fantastic start for him. And the great thing is that'll just fill in with confidence. You know, when the next Europa League game comes round, he'll be absolutely chomping at the bit. I mean, to be fair, he could make a very good case to be involved in other fixtures beyond that at this point.
For sure. I'll tell you who else has it. And I know he missed the chance from a Tierney cross, whose deliveries were sensational all night. But Joe Willock. You know, that we've spoken before about his ability to be in the box at the right time and for things to fall to him, which reminds me a little bit of Aaron Ramsey. Also, I don't want to get overboard here, but there was another player who I was very fond of who seemed to always be around when the ball broke in the box, and that was
Giulio Baptista.
That's it, exactly.
Yeah.
Robert Pires. But, you know, again, look, I'm stretching it out here, but the way that Joe Willock drives with the ball and drives forward with purpose, and the final ball isn't always there yet. There was one that he overhit for Bellerin, much to his own dismay. But there's just something about this guy that, you know, if he can continue on this path of development, this progress that he's making, if he can keep his, you know, keep his feet on the ground and keep his head down and work hard, I mean, I think it's all there for him. I think he's such an exciting talent as well.
Yeah, I agree. And I think almost wherever you start him, he ends up in that penalty box. And I think it's too simplistic to sort of look at this team and go, well, you know, just port that into the Premier League. But I do think something where we're falling short domestically is just getting numbers forward, getting men ahead of the ball. And Willock is almost a guarantee of that. He can smell goals in a way that is a bit reminiscent of Pires. And he's done it ever since he first came into the first team. He's been a player who's looked like he's going to score. He did it last season. I think he's got 3 goals already this season. I mean, that might make him one of our top goal scorers.
It is. He's third highest goal scorer behind Aubameyang and Martinelli.
There you go. So he's a player who's such a threat in the box. And yeah, look, he has missed chances this season, but I think he's going to. And I remember Aaron Ramsey, certainly early on in his career, composure was a bit of an issue for him. He would just thrash at the ball at times. I think Joe Willock's already a bit more composed than that in his finishing. And I thought we saw that the way he took the goal against Liège. But I really like him. I love the drive he gives in midfield, the box-to-box push that he can give the midfield. And he would be really close to be involved in the Premier League for me. I mean, at the start of the season, he was in the first team, and I really would be considering bringing him back, because he just gives you something different. Again, a bit like Martinelli, it's something different to what we already have. It's another asset. And I really, really like him.
Yeah, I think Emery has got to look at last night and what the midfield did and look at the profiles of the players that he had in midfield last night versus the profiles of the players that he plays in midfield on a fairly regular basis and think about the balance and think about, okay, what was significantly different? Okay, quality of opposition, the tournament maybe not having as much pressure as the Premier League and all those kind of things. But in terms of the players and the individuals, the balance of abilities and talents and what have you last night, Torreira, very, very good, without being, super eye-catching in terms of or in comparison with some of the other players, but did a very good job in a position which is, probably his best position. I know we talked about this on Monday, but, you play him there. Dani Ceballos, in a way reminded me, again, to come back to Aaron Ramsey, reminded me a little bit of Aaron Ramsey. Remember when we had Arteta at the base of the midfield? In that period when I think we went through a bad time and we might have lost at White Hart Lane and we kind of had to dig in and produce some results. And it started with an Arteta-Ramsey combination in midfield where Arteta was the deepest lying player. He didn't do anything particularly adventurous with it, but he kept the team moving. He used the ball really well. He helped us maintain possession. And we had Aaron Ramsey alongside him who was kind of like Ceballos in that he was everywhere and he was working hard. When he was on the ball, he was doing things with the ball. So I thought that combination worked really well. And when you add Willock to that, it just seems like something so fresh and invigorating. I really enjoyed the way the midfield worked last night.
I think I've been thinking about this Torreira thing and, where he plays within the midfield. And when I think back about the midfield that Unai Emery sort of has been picking and the one he picked at Old Trafford, which was Xhaka, Guendouzi, Torreira, I can look at that trio and understand why you would think, well, the guy who's going to break forward, the one who's got the most instinct for sort of breaking forward, getting in the box, picking up the pieces and pressing from the front, in that trio, probably for me, it is Torreira. Xhaka's not a guy who ever gets beyond the striker. Guendouzi isn't really either. Like, he's a good creative passer from deeper positions. But Torreira can do that. As soon as you introduce someone like a Willock, then it sort of liberates you from having to give Torreira that job, and you can put him back maybe where he's more comfortable at the base. Yeah. I do think so, because you need someone to be supporting the striker centrally. And I think that, I mean, I've said this before, but I think Willock is our best bet of that. I think he's the guy who does that most naturally. And then if you go behind that, you can have Torreira alongside a Guendouzi or someone like that. And that seems to me to have a lot more natural balance to it.
Yes, I agree. And look, it requires a reshaping of the midfield that perhaps isn't something that Unai Emery would countenance, given his fondness. Please. Yeah, exactly. But, let's not get hung up on that this morning, because I think we need to stay focused on the positives. There will be plenty of time throughout this season, I'm sure, to nitpick over decisions and what have you. But last night was such fun. I just want to keep it as upbeat as possible for this particular episode until, we talk about other things. Ceballos got a goal, could have scored another goal. And then let's go back a bit and talk about Kieran Tierney.
Okay. Happily.
I looked at Kieran Tierney last night and it felt like something. Like, I love Nacho Monreal. Don't get me wrong. I absolutely love Nacho. I thought he was a very, very good player for us. And I don't want to downplay his contribution to the team and some of his really excellent performances at left back, because I think there was a period where he was a really very good attacking left back and also a very good defensive left back. But you look at Tierney and you're kind of thinking, it's a different level, isn't it? The quality of his deliveries, his aggression, winning the ball high up the pitch, demanding the ball. And one thing I noticed, I don't know if you noticed this as well, but he sort of tucked inside a bit more than I'm used to seeing a left back doing.
Yeah, I guess, and that's, you know, that is often the way I think with modern fullbacks. I think it's that Guardiola innovation, and he also is a proper back four left back. You know, he's not a wing back. He's a guy who can play with a deep starting position and still get to the byline. I really love that about him, that he's got that sort of rocket up the flank. I mean, there's something very, and I mean this in the nicest possible way, there's something quite old school about him as
yes.
a player.
Yeah, absolutely. From tucking his shirt in
yeah.
to just the way he plays the game. Yeah. And sometimes you need that.
Yeah. He's a good old-fashioned British left-back, but in the best possible way. I mean, you know, think even going back to Ashley Cole, Gael Clichy, Monreal to an extent. These weren't guys who, yeah, they might get in behind and they could sort of square a ball, but they weren't swinging in crosses of great quality from the left-hand side, you know, from the edge of the penalty area. Tierney really has got outstanding delivery. I mean, you'd almost put him on all our set pieces. That left foot is fantastic. But the other thing that I would think about him is, I don't know if you saw his sort of chat with Hector Bellerin for Arsenal.com, but there was a great question where I think he was asked, would you rather a match-winning goal or no, a match-winning assist
yeah.
or a match-winning tackle? And he went tackle straight away. And Hector was like, oh, you'll go tackle, won't you? And he was like, yeah, definitely. And I actually thought of you then. I thought, oh, Andrew will like that, I suspect.
But what he said was as well, it was just a regular tackle. Doesn't have to be a match-winning tackle, just a tackle.
Any tackle.
Any yeah. tackle at all. And I think that's brilliant. And I love that bit towards the end of the game where the guy fouled Martinelli and he fronted up straight away. And I know Guendouzi has been, you know, shown a bit of that. But I feel like that's something we've been missing from this team, that when the opposition go after us, when they kick us, we're a bit sort of slow to stand up for ourselves. You know, there's it's hard to explain, because you can say, well, it's a lack of character or a lack of balls, and maybe it is kind of that. But I think when you've got players who naturally are not going to take shit from the opposition, it does transmit itself a bit to the rest of the team. And you saw Hector Bellerin come across, and in his role as captain on the night, he felt some responsibility, and he got involved, and he was having none of it, because what we have is like two, I guess you would call them senior pros, because they're going to be both first team players, Bellerin yeah. and Tierney, but they're young senior pros, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Both very, very experienced, despite their, you know, their 23, 24 years of age, whatever they are, but they've plenty of experience. And the two of them were over to look after their young teammate who's only 18. And I love that. And I love Bellerin saying to the referee when he was getting booked, I just came over to talk to you about it. No, he didn't. He didn't come over just to talk to the referee. He came up to stick up for his mate. And I thought that was absolutely brilliant. I love that. And we've been talking, haven't we, about how excited we are about seeing Bellerin and Tierney in the team and what they might bring to it. And we've considered it from the footballing angle. We've considered it from what they might give us on the pitch, I mean, to say, you know, going forward defensively, what they can contribute, the partnerships they might have with the players in front of them. But I don't think we considered, and maybe we weren't aware, of what they might bring to the team from just a character point of view, and what they can add to it from that side of things.
Yeah, I think so. And, I mean, obviously, playing with the young players, I think, helps to generate that sort of behaviour, because, you know, there's a sort of natural instinct to protect some of these younger guys. But I love that those two step forward, and, you know, Bellerin was wearing the armband, he's one of the five captains, and I think we saw what an important role he could play in the squad, because we have got a lot of young guys in their teens, and he's kind of a bridge between them and the senior pros. You know, it's difficult to imagine, I don't know, Joe Willock hanging out with Socrates necessarily. You know, there's between that age of sort of 18 and 30 or 31, whatever it is, there's a gulf in football. That is those 12 years are absolutely massive. But Bellerin seems like someone who's able to bridge those gaps and be someone who can kind of connect the different elements of the squad.
Yeah, I know. I mean, when we talked about the captaincy throughout the summer and what have you, and I would posit Bellerin as one of the options. I know a lot of people weren't convinced, and maybe for good reason, but I think he showed, and even in the post-match interview with BT Sport, you know, he was very, very smart, very intelligent, very measured, came across really well. It was, you know, he didn't say anything particularly controversial, but he went a bit further than the usual sort of, yeah, it was a great game, proud of the lads, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I thought there was a bit more substance to what he was saying. And I think, you know, him being part of the captaincy group is a really positive thing. And I think it will be a positive thing for the club. And I think it'll be a positive thing for him as well.
Yeah, he's a class act. He really is, Hector. And I feel very blessed to have him. And I this feels like a mega jinx, so forgive me. Maybe we'll delete this bit. But I just, when I look at him, he seems very settled here now. I don't know what's changed, but I felt like 2 years ago, you know, I was constantly thinking Bellerin's going to be off. He's going to be going to Man City. He's going to go into Barcelona. And it really feels like Arsenal is home for him, and he feels very committed and part of the culture. And when people ask me sort of what's Arsenal about? What are the values? Which are the players who embody that? He really is the guy who comes to the fore in that respect. And yeah. I know we've got five captains now and Granit Xhaka's number one, but I don't think it will be too long till it's Hector Bellerin who's number one.
Yeah, he talked about that, about the injury and how it's changed his perception on things. Mm. And he said it's made him a better person, a better human. Because I guess you have to, in your life, have some setbacks. You can either allow those setbacks to send you down a bad road, maybe unintentionally, or you can use them to make yourself a better player, a better person. And he seems very determined to do that. So, you know, great for him. Great for him to come back and play 90 minutes. Great to see Tierney. Great to see Rob Holding do another 90 minutes as well. You know, sort of quietly, calmly, assuredly, without too much fuss or bother. There wasn't a great deal going on with Rob Holding last night. And I know, obviously, himself and Mustafi at the center of the defense, they weren't particularly troubled, but for us, it's a positive thing. It's a positive night. Just a great deal of fun. And
so far, I mean, the cup competitions have been great fun, haven't they? I mean,
yeah.
If you could swap those performances in, you know, for the league games, I think everyone would be a lot more cheerful. But the Europa League, we were sort of dreading it, I think, having to go through it again. But getting these young players out there and giving them those opportunities, which I think everybody advocated, has been really, really rewarding so far.
Yeah, I mean, it is like the Europa League. You know, it's terrible, I think, that we're in the Europa League this season. But what does make it enjoyable, and what I feel was sort of perversely an opportunity for us this season, was the fact that, you know, people's apathy towards this competition in a way, and the absolute priority, the need for us to get back into the Champions League, meant that we had to sort of play these young players in this competition. And you think about some of the old League Cup nights, you know, when Arsene Wenger used to do it, and you'd see the kids breaking through from the reserves, or the young players being given a chance. And they were always, not always, but we had a lot of really enjoyable nights and performances. And I'm looking forward to seeing what the rest of this Europa League group stage brings, because, Frankfurt was a bit different to last night. I don't think we were anywhere near as dominant there, but we ended up winning 3-0. We've won 4-0, 7 goals, 2 clean sheets. You add it to the 5-0 against Nottingham Forest in the Carabao Cup, and so far the cup competitions have been the most enjoyable thing about this season so far.
Yeah, and Emi Martinez's record is looking pretty healthy at the moment too. So
yeah,
it's all good news in the cups. I mean, I guess we just have to really hope that positive momentum can carry through to Sunday.
Can you put your finger on why this is a question we've been asked lots of times, so I'll just ask you it rather than do it in the second part of the season. But do you think there's any one thing you can put your finger on as to why these performances feel, or not feel, are better, more enjoyable, the football is better, et cetera, in comparison to what we've been doing in the Premier League?
I think it's probably a number of things. The thing that strikes me is that, maybe the possible exception of Frankfurt, the teams that we've been playing have come with a slight inferiority complex. And maybe in the Premier League, certainly when we're playing good teams, we're the ones carrying that. And it feels like, you know, last night, I mean, Liège, they sort of came... I mean, look at the first goal, the way that we passed the ball out from the back. They're relatively passive in their approach. And I think Forest were kind of similar, really. So I think a lot of it is to do with, you know, I think in the Premier League, teams regard us as vulnerable and they are proactive and, you know, they sort of look to hurt us. And I don't know if it's because of our continental reputation or, you know, people aren't paying close enough attention, but I do think in Europe and in the Cups, we've been afforded a little bit more dominance. I don't want to take credit too much away from the young players who I think are performing to an extremely high standard. But I think that is a big factor, and there's just less intensity in those games.
Yeah, I think that could be it. I mean, I think the calibre of the opposition, or certainly the stature of the opposition, is different as well. Yeah. You know, we have played Liverpool away, we've played a North London derby, we've played Manchester United, regardless of how poor they are, you know, and how frustrating it was that we couldn't perhaps perform better at Old Trafford. I think that does play a part in the manager's approach, and maybe that's you know, something he can learn from. When we go into this next little group of fixtures, and we spoke about it on Monday, didn't we? Where as a run of fixtures in the Premier League, it's relatively kind, you know, not taking anything for granted, et cetera, but it is relatively kind that maybe if you send your players out feeling like, you know, they can express themselves, like they can play some attacking football, like the emphasis of our game plan isn't on, oh, okay, let's contain them and let's see if we can hit them on the break, you know. Maybe there's something for Emery to take from these performances that he can then hopefully imprint on the so-called first team going into these upcoming Premier League fixtures.
Yeah, I think particularly in the home games, you want us to assert that dominance. And I can understand him looking at this team's vulnerability on the road and thinking he's got to counteract that in some way. But at home, you know, we should be strong enough. And Bournemouth on Sunday is a good example of a game that we really should be attempting to dominate and attempting to control. But, you know, I mean, I loved last night. I really, really did. And I am reminded of the Carling Cup games, back when it was the Carling Cup. And I think people are dismissive of those teams because it's sort of seen that they didn't all come to fruition. I was looking at the team that played Sheffield United. It was Fabianski. We won 6-0. Carlos Vela scored a hat-trick. And it was Fabianski, Hoyt, Giroud, Song, Gibbs, Randall, Ramsey, Merida, Wilshire, Bentner and Vela. And I think people sometimes say, oh, well, you know, it didn't really happen for them. Well, I'd say... Yeah. Look, Fabianski is a top Premier League goalkeeper to this day. Alex Song, whatever you think of him, ended up playing for Barcelona. Kieran Gibbs was in the Arsenal team for years. Aaron Ramsey, an Arsenal hero. Jack Wilshere, barring injuries, what might he have been? It's not a bad proportion, is it?
No, it's not. Who was on the bench for that?
The bench was Manone, Coquelin, Lansbury, who's a Premier League player now, and then Frimpong, Agogo and Emmanuel Thomas, who obviously didn't pan out quite as well. But, you know, people say, oh, maybe one or two will make it. Well, look at that 11. I would say you could make a really good case that half of that team had great, really strong careers for players who've come through as youngsters at the club. So
yeah,
I don't think we should brush it off too lightly. I think there is real talent there. And for all the frustration this season, that is the big positive. And I mean, you know, what matters, what happens with the first team, and I mean the Premier League team when I say that, is paramount importance. But there is still, I think, a lot of optimism for the future. And I'm buzzing to see more of these kids in every competition.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I said to you on Monday, that the thing I've really liked about this season so far is the kids and is the willingness to use them. And I suppose in that sense, we have to give Unai Emery credit. I mean, I think the circumstances kind of dictate to an extent his team selections for these competitions. Nevertheless, when they go out and they perform the way that they do, and I think, what was it Bellerin said about Martinelli? You know, he's going out there, he's doing what the coach is asking him to do. You know, if we're going to be critical about Emery for the things that I think are reasonable to be critical about, we have to give him some props when his team produce performances like they have done last night and against Nottingham Forest. So, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if you've seen some of the Twitter conspiracy theories about... I've had people tweeting me saying Freddie Ljungberg is obviously coaching the teams for the Europa League. And, I mean, look, we all love Freddie and we all want him to have a great career as a coach, but, you know, I'm sure it is Unai making the calls. And, yeah, look, when it works for you, it's great. And
yeah.
I'm sure everyone who was there really enjoyed it.
I mean, look, in fairness, you know... I love Freddie too, but I don't think any manager with half an ounce of common sense is going to give over, you know, cup games, which represent a kind of a free hit, a sort of pressureless environment in which young players can thrive. They're not going to give those games over to somebody else to take the credit for it. Just not going to happen. So, you know, we'll see where we end up, of course. But look, a positive night, a very positive part one. We may have a couple of little issues to discuss in part two.
Some niggles.
Yeah, a little ache or strain here and there that we might have to address. But in the absence of anything else, will we leave it there for part one?
I suppose we've talked about a lot of Arsenal youngsters going on to do great things potentially. We should touch on... one that got away, Serge Gnabry, and thank him for his contribution to the Champions League, which I thoroughly enjoyed, I must say.
Oh, absolutely. That was so much fun. It was Tuesday night, so I was reading Amy's book, Amy Lawrence's book, 89, and there's a podcast available in which myself and Amy discuss the book itself and also a lot of stuff around Anfield 89, which you can get right now. If you haven't listened to it already, please do. And I had my laptop beside me and I was sort of, you know, going to stream the football on the laptop and read the book and just sort of do that thing you do where you glance over and see what's happening in the game. So I just, as I was setting up the stream thing, I saw Tottenham 1-0, Son scored, and I went, ah, fuck that. I'm not going to watch this. I'm not going to watch any of it. So I was reading for a good while and then picked up my phone at one point and I just saw my entire timeline going, Gnabry! I was like, ooh, what's happened here? So I checked in and then within a minute or two, there was, oh, Gnabry again! And then it just became super hilarious. So thank you, Serge Gnabry. And as he said himself, North London is red.
It is red indeed. And yeah, I mean, it was one of those where I wasn't watching it either. I've got no desire to watch Spurs in the Champions League. But as the goals began to rain home, I duly tuned in. And, you know, there was a point, I think, when Gnabry had scored twice where I was a bit sad. I was a bit like, it's a real shame it didn't work out for him at Arsenal. But fortunately, the more he kept scoring, the funnier it became. And by the end, I was just absolutely delighted. Any sadness about it has really washed away. And, I am enjoying Spurs' real collapse this season. I did see it coming, but not quite to this scale. So far, so good.
Long may it continue. Long may it continue. All right.
Potch in.
There might be a bit of hashtag fun later on. Let's see. Okay. We're going to leave it there for part one. We'll be back with your questions and more in part two right after this.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two, where we answer questions that you send to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog at and at Arsblog. Apologies. Also on the Arsblog Facebook page, facebook.com/thearsblog, and the Arsblog Discord server. If you're an Arsblog member on Patreon, you can get access to the Arsblog Discord server, through which you can ask questions for the Arscast Extra and also chat away with other Arsblog members about all kinds of stuff like dogs and food and music and what have you. From there, the first question comes from James Reef. I've got a question on Twitter about this as well. James Reef says, The Ozil situation seems like a handy stick for which those who don't rate Emery to beat the manager with. But ultimately, isn't this all Ozil's responsibility? In his six seasons at Arsenal, he has delivered exceptional performances and moments, but mainly been underwhelming and inconsistent. I don't understand the extraordinary leeway that Ozil gets from supporters. Meanwhile, Robert J. Beer, who's at BeergCamp10, what a great handle that is, he says, with the omission of Ozil from the Liège game, can we assume that he will now play no more part in Arsenal's season in efforts to force him out in January by Emery slash the board? Is this a waste of a player or shrewd business move to save his wages? And just to put it in context, when asked about Mesut Ozil and his absence from the Europa League squad last night, Unai Emery said, other players deserve to be in the squad more. And when asked what Ozil needed to do to get back into it, said he needs to continue to work hard.
Mm. Listen, I mean, we don't all agree on the Mesut Ozil situation, and those two questions make that quite clear. But I think Unai Emery last night was more honest and open and forthright on this matter than he has been at any point. I don't think he can be much clearer about what his issue is with Mesut Ozil than what he said yesterday. And however much anyone might admire Ozil as a player, how much I admire Ozil as a player, I respect that stance, that if you're deemed to not be working hard enough, you're not involved. And I know there are people to whom that's anathema, and they think, you know, the player, that ability has to be cultivated and looked after and made to feel special. And that is an approach that Arsene Wenger took at times, and sometimes it got good results. But I think that Emery was right to be so clear in what he said, and I think that's been a bit of an issue in the past that he hasn't been.
Do you feel like that's some genuine clarity on what's going on?
Yeah, I do, actually. I mean, would I bet my life that he won't be back involved at the weekend? No, because I think another weird thing about the situation is the oscillation, the change that has been there. You know, one minute it seems like Ozil's out the door, the next he's one of the five captains. But I think coming out publicly and saying there are other people who deserved it more, he needs to continue to work hard, it can't be laid more bare than that without making it sort of embarrassing. So I still feel the same, really, that, you know, if that is the situation, then I'm sort of, I can understand him not being involved. What did you make of it all?
I just find the whole thing, I think it's unfortunate. I think it continues to be a distraction. I do wonder if Emery's stance is backed by the board, by Edu, by Raul, etc. I'd love to know what they thought of it all. I mean, what I would say is that whatever you think of Emery, he can't lack self-awareness to the point where he knows that he hasn't been the most popular guy this season. And he also must
know... He's on Twitter.
Yeah, exactly. I saw people last night tagging Unai Emery in on Twitter. And like, when I posted the team news, Bellerin is captain, Ozil not even in the squad, and you have people going, at Arsblog, at Unai Emery, fuck you, Unai Emery. And it's like, okay. So yeah, if he's reading his Twitter timeline, he must know. I think he must also know what the reaction is going to be if he makes a decision like not just leaving Ozil out of the team, but leaving him out of the squad altogether. And it would, you know, it has to be, it can't just be a personal thing between, it can't just be like he doesn't like him or he wants to humiliate him or what have you. There has to be some reason why he's inviting that shitstorm, that firestorm of public reaction on himself. And, you know, when he says other players deserve to be in the squad more, you know, it would be a different reaction maybe this morning if we'd missed a player like Ozil, but we didn't miss him last night. We didn't miss him as a player and what he can bring on the pitch because the performance was so good. And maybe in some ways, maybe it's Emery trying to get something more out of him. You know,
maybe
yeah. It's trying to provoke a reaction. I don't know, but clearly what you would say is that it's not right behind the scenes. Something is not right, whether it's personal, whether it's the way Ozil is training, whether it's his fitness, whether there's been a big falling out over something that we're not aware of. You know, the reality is that when a player of Ozil's stature is left out of a squad completely, it becomes a talking point. And in some ways, it's a bit of a shame because it overshadows all the good stuff that went on last night. So, you know, I've said this before and I'll say it again, that the people at the top of the club really need to find a solution to this situation because it can't keep going on week after week. And then, we have this uneasy truce. Things seem to be a bit better. And in preseason, they seem to be quite fine. And then this unfortunate incident has, you know, maybe affected Ozil more than we know. And maybe that's part of it. I just don't know. But, from the outside looking in, And just looking at the reaction that it becomes this massive issue every time something happens around him. And I don't think it can continue for a great deal longer.
If Manchester United can find someone to take Alexis Sanchez off their hands, then surely, you know, we can do the same with Mesut Ozil. And I mean, I guess the difference is the will of the player, isn't it? Alexis wanted to go and play football. And is Ozil... Does Ozil want to? And if he doesn't, what does that tell you as well? It is a perverse and bizarre situation. It's a really unfortunate one. It's one I don't think any Arsenal fan takes an enormous amount of satisfaction in. I just think that you're right. I don't know what's gone on this season. I know a little bit about what went on last season and issues with Ozil not training with the intensity or the regularity that the club would have liked. Maybe that did light a fire under him because he did come back into the team and did have a decent enough run, whether that was desperation or whether that was Ozil up in his game. We can't be sure. But there must be something going on behind the scenes. I just don't believe that Emery, who's a man who plays his cards close to his chest, you know, at the best of times and isn't very clear about very much, he says, I just don't believe he would come out and say something as clear as he did about Ozil last night without something going on. And let's hope someone finds out and we as fans can get a bit more clarity because, yeah, it's one of those situations that it surely will all come out in the wash before long.
Okay, let's move on.
Let's talk about another universally loved character, Skodran Mustafi. Alexander on the Discord says, look, is it time to talk about Mustafi? Unfussy, decent passing, seems to be a comfortable fit with Holdinho.
Holdinho.
We're going to have brain farts no matter what. At least Mustafi's quick. I suppose I'd broaden the question to be like, what have you made of his first team runouts this season so far?
I don't think there's any reason to be critical about what he's done. And I think after the way this summer transpired, when he was told very, very clearly by Unai Emery that he needs to find a new club if he wants to play regularly, I think the way that he's played has been really excellent. You know, I think he had a little bit of an interview where he said, you know, I'm not going to go to war with people just because it didn't work out. You know, he's come into the team. He's played well. He deserves as much credit as anyone else for the performances that he's put in. You know, do I think the criticism of him last season was unjustified? I don't think it was. There were obviously elements of his game which were really poor, and the fact that perhaps he's not playing regularly means that we're not seeing them. You know,
of course.
So that's. I can't be critical of anything he's done this season. It doesn't mean that the concerns we had about him as a player last season or the season before, or Unai Emery's decision to say you need to find a different club, which I think everybody basically supported during the summer. You know, there's a reason why he made that decision about Mustafi. But, you know, he's here. He's our player. He's playing well. I thought his pass in the build-up to the first goal last night was superb. There was, you know, one moment where he passed the ball to the opposition under no pressure, but, you know, that shouldn't take away from the rest of what he did. But it is an illustration, perhaps, of why people had concerns about him. You know, I don't see that he's necessarily got a long-term future at Arsenal, but while he's here and while he's required, if he's professional and plays well, then there's no reason to be anything other than okay with that.
Yeah, I don't think he's got a long-term future either, really. You know, we've got Luiz and Sokratis as the senior centre-halves. We've got Holding and Chambers behind that. Saliba to come, lest we forget. I do forget at times. We've got Saliba to come next summer. He made his comeback from injury, I think, the other day. So, you know, I don't think he's got a long-term future here, but you've got to credit him for knuckling down, I suppose. And, you know, when the call comes, he's been very decent. So fair play. I take my hat off to him. I don't think he's been the most tested. But, you know, even in the Frankfurt game where we were a little bit more defensively exposed, I thought he had some good moments. So you've got to give credit where it's due.
Okay. Here's a question from JB at Gunnar Punner. What do you think of bringing Guendouzi and Aubameyang off the bench a 3 or 4 nil up in a Europa League group stage game? Isn't it a shame that there literally isn't a single other person, a senior or academy, who could have been named on the bench instead?
It doesn't bother me as much as it bothers others, I have to say. I mean, I think people always forget that footballers want to play and it makes them happy to play. And I know as a manager, you've got to be like, no, you know, we had this with Alexis Sanchez. He always wanted to play. And Arsene Wenger is like, you've got to at some point not let. But when they're in a good run of form, like Aubameyang is, you know, sometimes I do. It's a theory I've heard posited elsewhere, but you know, you sort of want to keep him going. I wouldn't have done it, but it doesn't really upset me to give him 10 minutes or whatever it was. What about you?
I think, you know, particularly with Aubameyang, I think the risk-reward factor was too weighted towards risk for me. I
think we've got a couple of injuries, haven't we, in the academy, like Balogun and
Balogun and John Jules, who might well have been on the bench ahead of Aubameyang had they been fit. Yeah, I mean, that was a factor. I didn't really see the need to bring him on. I don't understand particularly why he brought him on, but, you know, he got away with it. And I think sometimes, and I'm guilty of this, I know I'm absolutely guilty of this, is that we look at things that a manager does or might do through the prism of worst-case scenario. So he brings Aubameyang on with 10 minutes to go, and some guy launches himself into his knee and he's bollocks for 6 months. That's what I see, and that's what I fear. But, you know, it didn't happen. And he almost scored a goal and he gets his appearance fee. And like you say, he comes on the pitch and he's happy because footballers like to play. I don't think it was the most sensible thing he ever did. Guendouzi, I think Willock had to come off because he had a bit of an injury, I think. There was some suggestion he had a cut. I don't know where I read that, actually. But, you know, could we perhaps have had Robbie Burton on the bench to come on instead of Willock? Maybe so. Maybe yeah. so. You know, Guendouzi is an important part of our Premier League team as well. But, you know, nothing bad happened because of it. So if and when he does something like this and it goes wrong, then I think we can be absolutely critical. Even as much as I don't understand it, I just don't see the need to dwell on that too much this morning because it was, you know, overwhelmingly a positive night.
Yeah, I mean, I would say when you look at the bench, for example, you know, is there a need to have Guendouzi and Xhaka? You know, is there a need to have Chambers and Kolasinac? I'd like to think now that our qualification is essentially all but secure, you know, we could maybe have not all those senior players on the bench and have some of these younger, less experienced academy players making up the numbers, because then you've still got a senior option if you require it. But if you are 4-0 up and you think, well, let's give Robbie Burton a game rather than Guendouzi, you've got that option at least.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And, you know, we did get away with it last night, but it's not something I want to see going on too much in the group stages.
All right.
Let's have a look at some more questions. This one is from Alex McArdle on Twitter. And Alex says, do you see Maitland-Niles getting significant minutes for the remainder of this season? He's currently behind Chambers and Bellerin at right back and arguably bottom of the pecking order in midfield and on the wings.
I mean, I think he is probably going to find himself sidelined a little bit, but at the same time, we're talking about the Europa League and we're talking about the League Cup and it being an opportunity to, give young players a chance and also rest some of our senior players. I think there'll be minutes for him in those games. I think we also have to be cautious when we talk about Bellerin and Tierney. I know people are going to say, well, they should absolutely start against Bournemouth on Sunday. I don't think that's going to happen. And I think that's common sense. Both of them have come back from long injuries. Bellerin's just done his first 90 minutes after a cruciate ligament injury. It'd be crazy to play him on Sunday, if you ask me. Similarly with Tierney, you know, I know his injury wasn't quite as bad as Bellerin's, but he pulled out of the Scottish squad because they didn't want to overplay him. He wasn't in the Man United squad because he had a little bit of an injury scare. So, you know, there are still going to be minutes for players who are backing up our first choices. I thought he had some okay moments in the front three last night, Maitland-Niles. But I think when you look across the team and the performances, you know, Martinelli, Nelson, Willock, Ceballos, etc., I think he was probably, you know, the least impressive of our outfield players last night, and playing in the position that, you know, he says that's where he wants to play. So I'm not saying he's going to be back to square one, but I think he's got a bit to prove.
And do you think when he does get minutes, do you think they're more likely to be on the wing now? Given what's gone on with him and what he said publicly, or do you think Emery still considers him as an option at right back?
I think he can obviously be an option at right back when Bellerin's not in the team. It depends what he wants to do with Chambers. Chambers wasn't in the team last night, so you got to think he's in
for Bournemouth.
You know, he's a versatile player. That's probably one of his assets, and maybe one of the drawbacks for him is that he is so versatile. So, you know, it's a long season. There's a lot of football to play, injuries, suspensions, all that kind of stuff. I think he might find himself a little bit more sidelined than he has done in the last 12 months. Mm. But, you know, hopefully it's something it's a challenge he can rise to. It would be great if he could.
Yeah, and if you say, look, I want to play in this part of the pitch, and it means you go into a area of the pitch where there's plenty of competition, that's something you accept, isn't it? You've got to try and rise to that standard and meet it.
Adam Boone, who's at Adam_BooneUK, says, Saka got a chance in the Premier League after an impressive performance in the League Cup. Should Martinelli now also get a chance against Bournemouth?
It's an interesting one, isn't it? I mean, I suppose the issue is that Saka was very good at Old Trafford and, you know, he's the guy that you think Martinelli would probably come in for.
Well, it won't be Aubameyang, you know, let's be realistic.
It won't be Aubameyang. I mean, I guess it might be Nicolas Pepe. I mean, that's something to think about. I think Martinelli will be on the bench again at the weekend, but I think he certainly has shown that he, you know, deserves to get some time. I think he absolutely does. What about you?
Yeah, potentially he's in contention for a start on the left. But if Emery, you know, stuck with Saka after getting an assist at Old Trafford and playing, you know, pretty well in what wasn't our most fluent performance of the season, then you couldn't argue with that. But, you know, as an option from the bench, absolutely. I can see him coming on with, you know, half an hour to go if we need a goal. Hopefully it's a bit more convincing than that, but, you know, it's a good option to have from the bench. And in the absence of Lacazette, you know, to have another player who can come on and give you a goal threat, I think that might just play into Emery's decision-making about, you know, about the team for Bournemouth. I think it's more likely that he's gonna start from the bench. Arsenal down under. Go on, sorry.
Go on. I was just going to say, Oliver T said, would you drop Pepe for Martinelli or Saka?
I probably wouldn't. I'd like to see Pepe start on Sunday. You know, it's going to be a 2-week break now after Sunday, isn't it? We've got an interlull coming up. So if it were me, I'd give Pepe every chance of getting a goal and boosting his confidence ahead of that international break. If it were me. And if it doesn't happen, then you consider your options when we come back from that international break, you know. But I would play him, and I would play him with the hope that the midfield we send out against Bournemouth is a bit better balanced, and that we are going out there with the kind of mindset that we showed against Standard Liège. Because I think if we have him in a team which is confident and which is set up to attack and which, you know, can play to its strengths, then he's got a better chance of making a contribution. So I would stick with Pepe.
So what do you think we'll see against Bournemouth? Leno, Chambers,
Sokratis-Luiz, Kolasinac, Xhaka,
Guendouzi.
I'm hoping one of Willock or Ceballos.
Ceballos.
Aubameyang, Pepe, Saka, I think.
Yeah, Lucas Torreira would be unlucky, wouldn't he, not to start that game?
He would be. I mean, that's what I think we'll see. If it were me, and certainly going forward, I'd be very much inclined to play Torreira in that deep position, as we've talked about before, but it's what we reckon Emery is going to do. But I think Ceballos or Willock in the midfield would
change the dynamic.
So you've either got a clever player like Ceballos, somebody who will get on the ball and pop up here and there, or you've got somebody like Willock who will drive the team and carry the ball and drive between the lines and get into the box, and that could make the difference in terms of how the team is set up. Just going back to what Arsenal Down Under asked at AFC Down Under, should it be Gabby Goal or Goal Briel? There is a Gabby goal already.
There is a Gabby goal, so I guess it's Gabriel.
Gabriel Martinelli, yeah.
Yeah, Gabriel Martinette. Just Gabriel is best, yeah.
Let's not overcomplicate this, James.
No. Fair enough. Did you have any more questions?
I'm sure I did, but was it your turn or my turn?
It's my turn, Beardy McBeardface is back on the podcast. Good to hear, hello, Beardy. And Beardy asks, is Eddie Nketiah the only person who didn't enjoy Martinelli's performance last night?
I don't know. I mean, look, I don't see the need to set one against the other at this point. Nketiah is having a good loan spell at Leeds, and when he comes back, he's going to be a central striker. And as Emery said, you know, centre forward is not Martinelli's best position. So what about Martinelli, you know, providing for Nketiah? That's something that could happen. That's definitely something that could happen.
Good point, but I also think we should touch on the fact that going into this season, you know, we sent Eddie out on loan, and obviously when Lacazette got injured, there was real concern of, oh, we haven't got another centre forward. And the way Martinelli has stepped up in that position has really solved a bit of a problem for Emery, just to be that backup or that alternative to Aubameyang. So it's good news all round, really. And I think, yeah, there'll definitely be room for them both in the squad next season.
For sure. James Lowe at Lowey. 133 says, when do you think Martinelli will break Henry's goal-scoring record? We have a number of questions and comments like that. I think, where's the other one that I had here? Babs, who's at _BabsJ, why is Martinelli the second coming, and anything you say against him will be blasphemous? So we better not say anything there. I'm trying to think, have I got some more? I might have a couple more. Andy Smith, who's that? Andy Smith, 1992, asking, does the 90 minutes for Bellerin and Tierney rule them out of starting on Sunday?
I think it does.
I think it does, and I think that's sensible. And I think
they get the international break as well. They could probably play a friendly or an under-23 game in that period, keep them sharp. And I think after that point, why not? Do you know what I mean? I think then they'll be in a position to potentially... Well, I mean, what do we come back to? We come back to... we've got a Europa League game. No, Sheffield United away on the Monday night.
Oh, not another Monday night. Really?
Yeah, it's another long, long, long interlo.
Right. Motherfuckers.
I know.
And then we're... that's bullshit. Fuck you, Sky Sports. You fucking fuckers.
And then we've got three games in a week. We've got quite a, you know, we've got Sheffield United on the Monday. Then we've got a Thursday game, Europa League, Vitória, and then Crystal Palace at home on the Sunday. And we've all got quite grim memories of that game last season.
Okay, let's leave that to one side. Rob Walker, who's at RobW28, says, Arscast Extra is an anagram of Arteta sex scare. Is there something we need to know? If that's real, that's pretty fucking amazing. Is
that
it?
That is scary. Arteta sex scare. It's a prophecy.
Wow.
He eventually takes over. What his undoing will be.
Yeah.
Some sort of scandal.
There you go. Cameron DeMann, who's at Cameron DeMann. I think this is addressed to you more than it is to me.
Okay.
Would you rather dress like Bellerin or Tierney for 12 months?
For 12 months, I'd love to dress like Bellerin. That would be quite fun, wouldn't it, for 12 months?
It would be sensational to see you dressed. Yeah.
Doing on the whistle in like a leopard print jacket. Or whatever it is.
A vinyl pink Mac with some kind of strange hat and a cravat.
It's too much upkeep, though. You know, he talks about it with Kieran Tierney in that video. I think he was joking around about how long it takes him to get dressed in the morning. But you know, I never really have to get changed. Just sleep in my clothes.
I would like to see you dress like Bellerin more than Tierney. I don't really know what Tierney dresses like. They said in the video he wears a lot of black.
Bellerin described his style as chavvy, I believe.
Right.
Which is slightly pejorative. But, you know, Tierney took it very well. I mean, I think, I think uncomplicated is his approach.
Just black is fine, though. I mean,
Black is fine. Black. I mean, you know, it's slimming.
Yeah.
Just an advantage.
Right, final one before we go, and I'm just trying to find it here. I did have it somewhere. Basically, we had some...
It was something like...
we had some hashtag fun last year. And this one... where the hell is it? I'm just going to...
I mean, we haven't indulged sufficiently, really, in the hashtag fun yet.
No, we haven't. But this one is... okay, it's from Aksat Batnagar. God, why does it... I apologise for mangling it. And he's at Aksat Buchtinger 94.
Andrew Mangling.
Yeah, Andrew Mangling. And he says, I see All I Out is trending. please do your thing.
Oh, okay.
Shall we? Yeah, we shall a bit. I had a look here.
Oh, go on. Tell me what you found.
Mourinho, please take us back. He was right about the whole club. Hashtag Ole out. And this one, I discovered that I did not hate Mourinho. It was just peer pressure. Hashtag Ole out.
Wow, it was just peer pressure, guys. That is a fascinating thing among Man United fans. There's a big movement among them who revere Mourinho and are like, he was right and the club was wrong. And a healthy chunk of them are like, Mourinho didn't get a fair crack of the whip. They're welcome to have him back, to be honest, because he's such a toxic individual. Gerald, who's at Gerald3 official, so it's the official Gerald.
Right. Well, says, the third official Gerald. There's probably a couple of others.
He starts with hashtag Ole out. Not serious at all. Zero away wins since PSG. Where is the team heading? He can't win even small games. All he knows is to smile and say, we played very well. That's all he knows.
4 wins in last 22 games, and this man has audacity to laugh after drawing to AZ Alkmaar. Get this clown out of my club. Hashtag Ole out.
I mean, it's great. They're turning on a hero.
Yeah.
Fun to see.
It really is. Fun to see. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, there's loads of these. Mourinho was right about everything. United owe Mourinho an apology. Glorious.
I know. Yeah, the Mourinho sort of cult has sort of taken root in the United community. It's interesting.
And this was my favourite one. You know that weird Man United fan with the TV channel?
Yeah, the dude who sits in his chair. Yeah. I know the dude.
Oh, bloody hell. Oh,
bloody
no.
Hell.
Oh, they've scored a goal. Oh, I can't believe it. Oh, no. My life is over. That guy, he says, hashtag Ole out actually trending. Let's hope it's something we all look back on and laugh when we win the treble in 3 years.
Wow.
Yeah, good luck with that, man.
This guy, Storm, has just tweeted, Mourinho was right about everything. 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 Hashtag Ole out.
I mean, that's like something
for The Shining.
All work and no play make Ole out.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. Okay, well, look, I'm glad we've had a much more upbeat and enjoyable episode for everyone to get their ears into this Friday.
We all needed it.
Hopefully, on Monday, we'll have an equally upbeat and positive episode after we do the business against Bournemouth. Fingers crossed. So until then, thank you as ever for listening. Again, thanks for all the feedback, and we will catch you on the next one.
Oh, a little bit of last good news.
What?
Santi Cazorla is in the Spain squad again. It's a beautiful day for everybody.
Absolutely. Although it's pissing rain here in Dublin, but inside, the sun
inside,
is shining.
Inside, we're all smiling like Santi Cazorla.
We are. All right, folks. Take it easy.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.